Leading off with the big story of the day, here's The Drive with Zach Bye and Denver, Colorado's own Philip Lindsay.
Who win it now?
All right, 1 hour in the books. Went by really fast. We have still so much to get to today. We were just talking Nuggets the last two segments. We opened up with the March Madness stuff. And we shift gears here. We talked about the... and we referenced it. We didn't really take a dive into it like we will now. But, Phil, something happened over the weekend that may have Broncos country asking a familiar question. And that question is, what's the plan here? What's the plan here at the quarterback position? And what spurred that familiar question is Justin Fields going to the Pittsburgh Steelers for a first-round pick? No. Second round? No.
Got to be a third.
Third and a fourth? Third and a fifth? No. A fifth? No. A sixth-round pick. A sixth round pick, not next month, next year. Now that pick does convert to a fourth round pick if Fields ends up playing more than half the snaps this season. But what was going through your head when you saw this news?
You know what? The player in me, Zach, was a little upset just because, you know, I do like Justin Fields. I think that Justin Fields is a good quarterback. I think that he was put in a situation where you're with the Chicago Bears. Tell me the last time that the Chicago Bears had a good quarterback. You know, or a good supporting cast at that.
They've almost, like, you could argue, literally never had a franchise quarterback in the whole history of the Bears.
You know what I mean? So we don't know exactly what Justin Fields truly can bring to the table if he had weapons around him or a coach that loved him, truly loved him, right? Like Tua. Tua got in a great situation where his coach that believed in him, loved him, and now look at him. Put weapons around him. The Bears put weapons around whoever's going to be the next quarterback. But didn't do the same with Justin Fields, which that's kind of, to me, it's like, this was your first-round draft pick quarterback, and you didn't do it for him.
Yep.
So that's kind of how I felt about it. I felt like he was disrespected in the sense of getting a sixth-round draft pick, and not even for this year, for next year's draft.
Right, that's wild.
A sixth.
That's wild.
Zach Wilson is trying to get a seventh, and nobody wants to give up a seventh. And you mean to tell me you're able to get someone like Justin Fields for a sixth? Something ain't right. Truly, something is not right, Zach.
So what are you, like, what's going through your head when you say it's like something's not right? You think...
They talk. I think that around the whole entire league, the whole entire NFL, people talk. Coaches talk. GMs talk. Right? And sometimes things can get bad-mouthed about you or whatever the case may be, and people start to back out. People start to do whatever it takes, and I think that's where they were able to get that six. And Mike Tomlin was like, if you're going to give a six for this young man, I'm taking it. Why would you not? Because I think he's special. And if he ends up panning out there and with the Steelers, and it doesn't have to be this year, but next year or the year, you know, they're going to have to pick up his option this year, I think.
Well, actually, I don't think that that's true. I don't think they are picking up the fifth-year option. Have we seen that?
Which is smart then.
Okay, I want to double check on that before we go on the record with that. But I don't believe they're picking up the fifth year option. Could it have been that we just going back to you kind of talking about hey, these GMs, these coaches end up talking and can kind of I don't know sink the market of a player.
Yeah.
I think you're saying there is like could it. Be that we just overestimated the market for Fields?
And we could.
I mean, we're talking about a guy who's got 40 career touchdowns in 3 years, 30 interceptions, a 10-28 record, completion percentage that's, you know, 60%, which is like the bare minimum in the NFL. It's not like, you know, Fields is an exciting, intriguing player, but could we have just misjudged the market? Or how about this? The Bears said repeatedly that they wanted to do right by Justin Fields. Could they have gotten a better offer from somewhere else that was like, now I'm not saying a second round pick, but it was maybe like a fourth or fifth round pick that Fields was like, no, not trying to go there. Like,
I believe that was probably the case, Zach.
So they settled for a
sixth. Because I've heard that Justin Fields had other, you know, suitors and he didn't want to go there. So somebody probably did give up a fifth or a fourth, at least a fifth. I mean, I think Baker was in the same situation as someone like Justin Fields. Baker ended up getting traded. I'm looking at it right now for a fifth round pick to the Panthers at that time.
And fifth round, you said?
I want to say a fifth round pick.
Okay.
To the Carolina Panthers. So Justin Fields needs to kind of look at what someone like Baker Mayfield's blueprint is and kind of follow that. And I think that he felt like over there with the Steelers, his best option to play, to be developed, was over there with Pittsburgh.
Well, we agreed on the many things that we disagreed with Russell Wilson. The one thing that we agreed here in the last couple months was Pittsburgh was the best destination for Russell. And it's the same conversation for Fields for all the same reasons. Fantastic defense. If you could be a 10-win team with Kenny Pickett, you know, you could not have to use your imagination that Fields or Russ could have the Steelers into the playoffs again. They have a good running game, well coached, established culture.
Yeah.
I think this is winning for Justin Fields and the Steelers. I think this is an uppercase W for both parties because it's not like a sixth round pick.
No.
And honestly, and, you know, I don't want to get like hyper negative on the Broncos today, but if this is all that it was going to cost.
I was
going to
ask you, Zach.
If this is all that it was going to cost, I kind of bristled at the thought of Fields with Sean Payton because Fields, when I think of his game and watching him in the last 3 years, I don't think of rhythm and tempo and timing. And those are some of the hallmarks of the Sean Payton offense. And those are words used by Drew Brees,
for sure,
who would know better than him. But that being said, the backdrop of those conversations was always that it was going to be like a second-round pick or maybe a third and a fourth. It's just like, that makes sense. For a sixth-round pick, I think it's more fair to ask the question like, damn, you really couldn't work with that, even as in a backup role, development role for a sixth-round pick?
And I was going to ask you, Zach, if we were able to get a sixth-round pick for Justin Fields, you would have took that in the heartbeat?
Yes.
You're competing,
because it's
right?
The quarterback position.
Exactly. You're competing with Stidham, right? You don't have to pick up his option. I kept telling people that. Don't pick up his option right now. See what goes on. I think they owe him, what, $2 million, $2.5 million this year, something like that. You know, and then if they would have picked the option up now, they would have had to owe him like $25 million. But they didn't have to do that.
You didn't have to do that. Nope.
Let him go and compete with Stidham. Is Stidham that much better than Justin Fields? Like, are we really sitting here, Sean Payton really trying to believe in his, you know, gut that Stidham is a better player than Justin Fields? He may fit the system, fit the mold, but bring in Justin Fields to compete and see what he can bring to the table. And if it's not good, then get rid of him.
Well, and so you're right. Stidham is probably a better fit for Sean Payton's offense, but for a sixth round pick at the quarterback position, what did Sean Payton do? And again, I'm not advocating that and banging the table that this should have been the case, but I'm asking the question. I think it's fair. What did Sean Payton do his last couple years in New Orleans to make the passing game a little bit more dynamic? He had a guy named Taysom Hill.
Yes.
Who now is Taysom Hill like a top tier thrower of the football at the NFL level? No.
Swift Army knife.
Yes. But he can throw. He's capable to throw. Fields is capable to throw. He's not probably top tier, but he's a great athlete. He's got a really unique skill set. And if you're thinking outside the box and you might not love your plan at quarterback this year for a sixth round pick, I mean, think about the sixth round picks that have come through Denver. I mean, J.L. Skinner, Matt Henningsen, Seth Williams, Natane Muti, Juwan Winfrey, Sam Jones, Kayshawn Barea, D'Angelo Henderson. Like, no disrespect to any of these guys, but they are just guys.
Yeah.
And using your sixth-round pick for a potential upside with Fields,
he's a first-round draft pick. You're getting him for a sixth-round draft pick. The kid it has yet to hit those ceiling of what he can do, possibly do if he's with a good coach. Okay, Sean goes around like he's the guru of quarterbacks. Then why can't you fix a young quarterback? Not Russell Wilson, who's stuck in his ways. You know, like that old man like you, stuck in your ways.
I am, yep.
But a young quarterback that's willing to do what it takes so that he can stick around in the NFL, right? And that's, I don't know, Zach. It's a head scratcher. I'm going to be upset if in like a month or so we trade for someone like Taysom Hill. I'm going to be pretty upset because it's like you pretty much had that in Justin Fields and more.
Yeah.
But you want to keep Stidham here with nobody to compete for Stidham? Who are we going for, Zach Wilson now?
Yeah, this doesn't make much sense to me And at the core of why it doesn't make that much sense that the Broncos wouldn't be involved in this is because there's no downside. If you miss out on, and you don't have your sixth round pick, and I know the Broncos don't have a lot of picks, and I know that you can hit on a sixth round pick. I got it. But I just think for the potential upside at that position, even if he's a specific package guy, because it's the quarterback position and the potential value there, and we have another example of Sean Payton, even if you wanted to go with Fields as just like a package guy, this would have made more sense in Denver than not doing anything.
And we need George back. George would have been a little bit more aggressive. This is showing that George has no power, because since George has been, you know, the leader of the whole organization, making the decisions, he's been a little aggressive on getting players at least. Right now, Zach, the most excitement we're getting is a linebacker that just signed with us.
Yeah.
And Will Lutz deciding to opt out of where he was going to go and come back to Denver.
Yeah.
He's our savior right now.
Yeah.
So, like, what are we doing? What's the question, Coach, that you always want to say and ask?
What's the question?
What is going on? What is the plan?
I don't have answers for you. And if there's a thought where, well, yeah, he's a first round pick. You're gonna have to pay him. And Broncos don't have a lot of space. Well, they freed up the space. You know, Justin Fields' base salary is in 2024. No joke, $1.6 million. That's it. So like, he doesn't
pretty much vet minimum.
He doesn't cost anything. It didn't cost anything to acquire him. And again, I'm not sitting here trying to paint a picture of Justin Fields could have been the next 10-year quarterback for the Broncos, but because he does have some real raw talent, because it didn't cost anything financially or draft capital-wise, because we have an example of Sean Payton using a gadget quarterback to mix in with packages, and Justin Fields, if you were to relegate him to that, I think he would kill it. I don't know. And are we just at the point where it's like Sean Payton has just – such a type, and my pushback over these last couple months is like, yeah, it doesn't really fit the system with Sean, and you know, but because of
how sick and tired are you saying that now?
I am, because it's almost like someone who just only dates blondes and refuses to date anybody else. And
stuck
it's like,
in his ways.
I know that's your preference. I know that, but gosh, there's something to this brunette too, that can you at least take her on a date? And that's what this would be. It'd be dating. There's nothing, there's no big contract, there's no fifth year option, there's no draft investment, there's no financial investment. But the Broncos weren't interested. Now, so
would you be upset if Sean goes and spends a seventh on someone like Zach Wilson when you could have gave a sixth for Justin Fields?
No.
How would you feel about that?
You know what? I don't think I'd be that upset, because he is at least just investing in the position. That's part of my thing, is like, they're not investing in the position.
Yeah.
Their investment is Jarrett Stidham. And Phil, I swear to God.
That's blowing my mind, man.
I really hope, man. And sometimes we get so far down these conversations, you can't see the forest through the trees. Sean, in his mind, he may be just, in his mind, like, Stidham's getting the start. Like, Stidham will start for the Denver Broncos.
This whole time.
And I'm going to prove everyone wrong.
This whole time, like, we've been talking about this, and if... From the time that they ended during the season, Sean said, I'm going to go with Stidham. That would be so crazy, man. We did all this work just to come back to Stidham.
Would it be that crazy, though? Because Sean's confidence almost knows no bounds. It's almost unhealthy.
Well, see,
nothing more to share.
This is where he's going to get in trouble, is if Stidham is the only quarterback, they go to draft a quarterback. The quarterback that they want is not there, which... it's a big possibility that they don't get if it's JJ, you know, McCarthy. He probably won't be there.
No, he's not going to be there now.
No, because if you feel that way, I know that you think you're the guru, and you said that you're thinking better than some of these other coaches. Somebody else is out there thinking the same thing as you and wanting to jump you so that they can get this quarterback that they feel like is a franchise quarterback. So then what would the plan be then? Just take anybody?
See, that can't be it. That quarterback roulette, like, hey, wherever that little ball falls, whether it's red, black, green, we're grabbing it. That can't be the plan, because you can't tell me, unless it's the rarest intersection of all time, that the last quarterback taken in the first round is the one that Sean likes the most. Like, is that possible? Maybe, I guess it's possible, but it's unlikely. I think, You want to know what's you want to know what could be a scenario that's like a little bit scary is that if there's one or two QBs on the board that Sean likes, but he's like, I'm not taking him at 12. I'm drafting a great football player on offense for Stidham. Like I'm going to put Jarrett Stidham in the best position as possible. And maybe long-term for the Broncos, that'll be good because they'll draft Brock Bowers or something.
Yeah.
But like, what if that's his mindset? It's not, see, we're all just assuming that the Broncos are taking a quarterback. Like, don't assume things in the NFL draft. It'll humble you year after year. And what if it's like, no, we're going to take Bowers or we're going to grab the wide receiver from Washington. Roma Dunze, because that's going to put Stidham, my guy, who no one believes in, in a position to be successful.
Then where are we going? If that's the case, Zach, it's going to make a lot of people mad and upset. And I know that Sean doesn't care, but the reason why we're gutting this place out is because you're saying we're going to go get a young player at that quarterback position, groom him up to be a franchise quarterback, hopefully. And if that's not the case, then why do we gut this whole place down? Why do we give Sean $100 million? To tear this whole place down, to start, Jarrett Stidham, Sparky, man.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I'll say the same thing that I've said throughout this process. Sean's on the clock.
Yep.
Sean is on the clock because year one's already in the books. Year two, from the 10-day forecast, which might not be the most reliable thing in the world, but that's what we have to deal with. I'm like looking at like day two and three, and it looks like. Like 70% chance of rain. Like, I don't feel good about that. And
he's not going to get any grace from us. You said if he drafts a quarterback, then you would give grace. We all understand.
Yeah, rookie quarterback. Right? Yes, yes.
If you go with Jarrett Stidham and you don't draft that quarterback in the first round, there is no grace being given to Sean.
No, you're expected to win because you moved on from Russell Wilson and did take the biggest dead cap hit in the history of the sport because that actually gave you a better chance to win. That's what you said. So if that move gave you a better chance to win, guess what I'm expecting? You to win!
Yeah.
So this idea that, the Broncos are going to be terrible this year. No, I'm not co-signing that.
No.
I'm not co-signing that.
Nobody should.
If you draft a young quarterback, then we should show grace and have more patience with the process.
Be understandable.
But if they go with Jarrett Stidham, which looks like the plan, and by the way, that's what the odds are saying. We talked about it Monday last week.
We did.
Exactly 7 days ago at this time that the offshore odds have the number one likely option for the Broncos is with Jarrett Stidham starting for the Broncos week one. And this is not, I want to make this clear too. This isn't like totally anti-Jarrett Stidham. Like, it's not personal with Jarrett Stidham. Jarrett Stidham has played 4 games in the NFL.
He hasn't earned no respect in the sense of we should be sitting here saying, okay, yeah, he's our quarterback. No, you got to go out and earn it.
Yeah.
Shut us up. Go out there, win some games, make some plays that we're like, okay, Sean is a guru. He's seen something in this man that we don't see because right now how many games has he won? One. Yeah.
I need a finger to count his wins.
So how is someone like Jarrett Stidham able to just be the starting quarterback at the beginning of the year with no competition? That's crazy.
It can't play out that way. It can't.
But can it?
But I'll tell
you. Talking about Sean.
Well, it might be. Here's what it might be. A not so open quarterback competition in camp between Stidham and Bo Nix. That's what it may be. That's what it may be. And
well, Hard Knocks, I know you guys aren't coming to see us then, huh?
You know, that's just what it might be. And maybe, and guess what? Maybe Bo Nix will be a Hall of Famer. Maybe we'll look at Bo Nix like Lamar Jackson in 2018, where guys like Baker went in front and Sam Darnold and Mac Jones and Josh Rosen. And it's like, oh, no, it was the fifth guy in that class who's the best. Maybe that's what it'll be. And if Bo Nix gets drafted, I'll get behind it. I'll be supportive.
We have no choice,
Zach. Right.
We have no choice.
And I'll be optimistic, but I don't have a great feeling right now in my gut about the Broncos quarterback, because if I did have a great feeling in my gut, it would be based off hope. And hope is based on things that are unseen. What do you see here that's tangible that you can draw from? You don't have great draft capital. You're not picking at the top of the draft. There does happen to be 4 quarterbacks that are going to go before you pick. And, you know, maybe you'll grab the fifth one.
You never started a rookie quarterback.
Ever.
That's what I'm interested in seeing. Are you willing to start a rookie quarterback knowing that you're going to be uncomfortable? And everybody knows sometimes being uncomfortable is the way to go. You got to be able to be comfortable with being uncomfortable, Sean. I know you're out there preaching that to your teammates or to your players, you know. So I'm interested to see, even if you draft this quarterback, are you still so uncomfortable that you're not willing to start him?
It's a good question. We only have one example in the 16-year history of Sean Payton where he started a rookie quarterback, and that was Ian Book during COVID when the entire quarterback room got COVID, and he was pulled up from the practice squad. So, and you were there.
I was. We were happy.
As bizarre as that is, you were a part of that game.
It was like a Monday night, and I was like, okay, we're gonna get us a win. We needed the win too to keep our playoff berth alive. We had to beat the Saints.
This is in Miami, right?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. And when that news came out that he was gonna have to start a rookie quarterback that was on the practice squad, oh, everybody perked up.
I'm sure.
It was like sack galore.
I'm sure. What's the text line saying, Kamaje Granderson behind the glass? Oh, can't hear you. Can you hear him? Can you hear him?
No, I can't hear him.
Okay, I can't hear him either. What do you think? Just let us know. We'll tag you back in here. What do you think about the lack of competition? They're announcing in Pittsburgh. Shifting gears back to the field stuff and the Russ stuff. They're announcing in advance that Russ is not going to have to compete for the starting role, that he's being anointed the starting role. That does not make sense to you. That does not make sense to me. Does it make sense to you?
I think it's a bunch of baloney. I think it's just a feel good for Russ. I truly think that they went to Justin Fields. There's a reason why Justin Fields chose to come to the Steelers, not to be a backup. Just like Drew chose to go to New York when he could have came back to Seattle.
Right. Drew Lock. Yeah.
But then Drew goes on the podium and says, hey, I'm the backup. I've been a starter. Now I'm a backup, and I'm just going to play my role. No, Drew, you know, cut the stuff. We know that you're trying to battle for that number one spot.
And I think the Giants want him to battle for that
number
one spot.
The Giants want that to happen.
Yeah.
Just like the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
They want to see, does Russ battle, you know, or does he just kind of, I think, see, it's the opposite. We want Russ to battle, but they know that Russ doesn't want to battle. So if we sit here and tell Russ, hey, you're going to have to battle, it's going to be an issue. But if you say, hey, man, you're going to be our starting quarterback, later on down the line, you can say, look, Russ.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You didn't beat this man out.
Yeah, right.
We wanted you to be the starting quarterback.
Right.
We showed it. We told you were going to be the starting quarterback. Right, you didn't win it out.
No, I could totally see that.
You know, it makes it easier. And Justin Fields, in his era, they're saying, hey, this is yours. This is yours.
Yeah.
You can go out there and get this. We believe in you, but you got to go out there and prove it to us. You got to show it. If you beat Russ out, you will be our starting quarterback.
Fascinating. KJ, what's a RamosLaw.com text line saying?
All right. They're asking us, how is Jarrett Stidham any worse than a rookie quarterback? I think that's more of a question for Sean Payton, though, because if you're willing to start a rookie, but you also gave up on Russ, but you're going to simplify your system for a rookie, then why and how did we get here again?
Well, I mean, there's a lot there. To the text line question, to the RamosLaw.com text line question, how is Stidham any better than a rookie? Stidham might be better than a rookie right out of the gate. Stidham's...
In this offense.
Yeah, in this offense. He's been in the offense for a year. You heard Chase Daniel, who was in the Saints offense for 4 years, saying it takes multiple years.
Yeah.
So Stidham might be a better option out of the gate. But with a rookie, it's you might go through the short-term pain for the long-term, bigger picture growth, which is why we're saying we'll show more grace to the Broncos should they play a rookie quarterback. But again, that's something we've never seen Sean Payton ever do.
Well, my question to the texter would be, do you think that Stidham is a franchise quarterback? Because we're drafting, in my eyes, we're supposed to be drafting this young man, whoever the case may be, because we think he's going to be the future.
Yeah.
We think he is going to be that, you know, that franchise quarterback that we need here in Denver so we can get to the playoffs, so we can win a Super Bowl. And Jarrett Stidham, in a lot of people's eye, and maybe Sean's different, Sean thinks that he's going to turn into this guy that's going to take us to the promised land. I think that people want to see this young man, somebody who comes in to be that guy that we have hope in.
Yeah.
Not Jarrett Stidham. I think that's where we're going. We've seen a little bit of what Jarrett Stidham got.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know?
We have. And I'll ask this question, too, and I know we got to go here. It's like if there was a magic wand waved and everything we know about Stidham, if he was in this draft class, where would he go? Would he be a first-round pick, second-round pick, third-round pick? No, he wouldn't.
Yeah.
He wouldn't. He would be pushed way down the draft. And maybe these quarterbacks coming out of the draft will get exposed for being just like Stidham. But right now there's the upside. There's the fact that they're on rookie contracts. And maybe there is just hope involved with first round quarterbacks. Go look at the last 3 years. Most of them don't work out. All right, it's a big picture conversation. We have new wrinkles to it with what's going on in Pittsburgh. We'll circle back to it a little bit later in the show. But something is happening in Colorado sports for the first time in over a decade. We'll tell you what it is coming up next. All right, let's come off the top rope with it. One! Man, something's happening in Colorado sports for the first time in over a decade. This is pretty cool, man. Both the CU men and women are in the big dance together for the first time since 2013.
Uh-oh.
And that's not to mention the Colorado State Rams. Let's start with the men on the Buff side. They lost in the Pac-12 title game, but still punched their ticket to the big dance. Good for Tad Boyle and company.
Yeah, they heated up at the right time, Zach. They found a way to heat up at the right time. Cody Williams coming off the bench, I think, was one of the best things that happened to the Colorado, and Tad Boyle deciding to do that. He's able to make adjustments that help his Buffs win. And so they got into the dance. Now it's time to boogie.
Man, I can't wait for this. This is one of my favorite times of the year. And the Buffs will travel to Dayton. I have it on good information. They just touched down. They just arrived in Dayton here for the first four, where they're going to face Boise State. That game is on Wednesday evening at 7:10 Mountain Time on True TV. And they can earn the 10 seed in the South region and a matchup with 7-seeded Florida on Friday afternoon while we're on the air if they can find a way to beat Boise State. Now, these two teams played a year ago. Boise State did beat Colorado in a neutral site game. But good for the Buffs that they even put themselves in this conversation. Man, you know me, during the middle of the season, I'm like, these guys are dead.
Yeah.
What happened to the Buffs? And then they came back to life in the last, 8-10 games of the year.
We've seen what they really could be about. They're going to have to play team basketball. They're going to have to be gritty. They're going to have to get hot. At some point, one of the guards, Cody Williams, they're going to have to come along and spark something that's going to help us win. Because Boise State, they're a tough team.
And, guys like K.J. Simpson, Tristan Da Silva.
K.J. should have won Pac-12 Player of the Year, man.
Yeah, he was first team. He was first team all Pac-12, though. I mean, that's pretty – that kid has had a great career.
Yes.
For CU. And want to know what else? I mean, there's already enough on the line, but it would be a feather in Tad Boyle's cap if they can win on Wednesday. Because you know what that would mark? That would mark the single-season school record, 25 wins. They're at 24 right now.
Right.
They can get to 25. That'd be huge, man. I'd love to see this group go on a run. For as good as they've been through the years under Tad Boyle, they have stumbled in the NCAA tournament at just two wins. All right, so that'd be great, man. So we'll see what shakes out Wednesday night.
One, two!
And then the CSU Rams, Phil. The CSU Rams will be a 10 seed in the Midwest region. They're going to face Virginia in the play-in game. The game is going to be played tomorrow night. And if they win that game, they will face number 7, Texas, in the round of 64 in Charlotte on Thursday. Shout out to Nico Medved and that group, man.
Yeah. They're a scary team, Zach. Truly, at one point, they're ranked number 13.
Yeah, right.
And now, they got into the quote-unquote play-in or, whatever you want to call it. But they're one of those teams you have to watch out for. You were speaking highly of them at the beginning of the year.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, I think that they're going to win this game. They're going to play Texas, and everybody's like, oh, Texas number 7. Well, Colorado State, watch out for a team like that. They're hungry, and all it takes is a little spark.
Yeah, man. They're well-coached. Nico Medved has done a great job with that program. This is their second tournament appearance in the last 3 years. I'm a fan, man. I've watched that program grow. They're also at 24 wins. So 24 wins for both CU and CSU. And, good for the Rammies. They lost to New Mexico on Friday night. Had they advanced, they would have been an even better a better seed. And their last win during March Madness for CSU was in 2013 against Missouri. They advanced. They lost to Louisville. But we'll see what we're in store for, man. I cannot wait. And I'll tell you this. I really like, and I know, a lot of people kind of fussing over that they're in the first four. I think it's great for us. We'll get CSU on the main stage tomorrow night, CU on the main stage Wednesday, and the next thing you know, the whole tournament starts on Thursday, so they get their own time.
Look at you being selfish. I like it. I want to see everybody. I want to see it all, and this gives us the best opportunity to see all the teams.
All right, we'll keep it pushing here.
One, two, three!
And a huge shout-out to the CU women, who also punched their ticket. Again, men and women on the Buff side in the dance for the first time since 2013 together. The Buffs are a 5 seed. They'll be playing 12th-seeded Drake in Manhattan, Kansas. That is where Kansas State plays, and they'll be hosting. They just missed out on hosting. The women could have been hosting up in Boulder. Some yeah. say that they got snubbed, but they kind of stumbled to the finish line. They dropped 6 of their final 8 games. Were a lot of those against ranked opponents? They sure were, but losing 6 of your final 8 games, that stings a little bit, and that's why they're not hosting.
Yeah, I mean, they dropped the ball when they needed to kind of pick things up. But Coach J.R. Payne has done a great job with those ladies, and they're going to go far, man. And honestly, this could be a situation. They're setting this up where they could end up meeting Iowa.
I know. That's what happened last year. I know. Caitlin Clark, biggest star in the entire sport, men or women. Not even close.
Hands down.
Not even close. But that's what happened last year. They met Caitlin Clark's Iowa Hawkeyes in the Sweet 16 last year. But don't forget, when this team, and I know you haven't, like when this team is at their best, CU, like they've knocked off the number one team in the country. They've knocked off the reigning champions
yes.
who beat Caitlin Clark's yeah. team a year ago. So all things seem like they're possible despite stumbling to the finish line. And I can't wait, man. I cannot wait. On the way out here, I got to shout out this story that's got March Madness vibes to it. So Long Beach State ended up firing their basketball coach. His name is Dan Munson. Last week today, like so 7 days ago,
yeah.
fired the coach. But they made a decision, both parties, that they'll let him finish the season.
Mm.
And then after the season, he's going to go his separate ways, right? You know what happened next? His team went and won the conference tournament and punched their ticket to the NCAA tournament. Are you kidding me? Like, how fun of a story is that? He got fired, coached his team anyway, and ended up bringing his team. They're the 49ers, I believe. They went on to win the Big West title and punched their ticket to the tournament. So a dead man walking is actually at the helm of a tournament team, which is just kind of like a fun story.
Which probably helped him out. Now that you know, they're going to get rid of him for you know whatever reason, he's going to go to another basketball team ASAP.
Yeah.
And he's laughing. What about that one story with the Utah State coach? It was on the women's side. For me, I'll let you know, like, it was after a game. She goes to a press conference.
Oh, I did see that.
Did you see that?
I did
and they're
see
asking,
that.
They're asking her these questions. She said, look.
Yeah, are you like rebuilding for
yeah,
next
yeah,
year
I
or
just
whatever?
Got fired. How do you get fired walking off the court?
I know. That's
actually unprofessional.
I was gonna say that's not good process. I mean, and that's not the NFL. Like you're the coach at Utah State. You should be able to do
yeah.
your post game press conference and then get relieved of your duties.
Like the next day.
Yeah, she was like, I'm guessing that's gonna be the last of the questions.
Yeah, you're like, I just got fired.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that was crazy.
All right, is something special developing right in front of our eyes? That's what it's starting to feel like. We'll tell you exactly what coming up next. Something special developing right in front of our eyes. I'm going to be honest. That's what it's starting to feel like here. How about the Colorado Avalanche going on the road again?
On the road again.
Again. Beating a high-flying Edmonton Oilers team on their own turf on Saturday night in overtime in a game that, I mean, shoot. How hysterically fun was that on Saturday night?
That was a playoff game. That right there was a playoff game, and I got to witness it. And I know some of your listeners don't like me saying this, but ooh-wee! That right there! I like it! Drew, I like it!
No, seriously, this is starting to get fun.
It is.
I mean, you're seeing these new guys settling in. You're seeing, you know what I'm seeing here in the last couple weeks? And maybe this is totally anecdotal, okay? I'm watching Nathan MacKinnon in the last 3 weeks smile as much as I've ever seen him smile.
He's relaxing.
He's so tightly wound in general. Like, yeah. He could do something great in, you know, through the years. I'm not saying we've never seen him smile, but I'm seeing it just such a regular basis because right now the times are good. Maybe a guy that didn't really fit in, no longer in the locker room,
yeah.
Ryan Johansson. Some of the new guys are, I mean, Phil, you tell me what you're seeing from these new guys. I mean, between Sean Walker and Casey Mittelstadt, I mean, let me upgrade you.
I got the chills right now. I got the chills right now thinking about Casey Mittelstadt and Sean Walker. That may be a little weird, but they fit this system so well. All right? Casey Mittelstadt passing is phenomenal.
Yep.
Now, he may pass too much. He may be aggressive on the passing, but I think maybe Bednar's telling him to do that, right? Letting everybody get implemented is, you know, it's helping out. He's a number two center, so it's good that that's happening. Sean Walker. 2 goals.
Man.
Should have had a hat trick.
Yeah, I know. In OT, right? Yeah.
Man, it feels good. It feels good. Now, shout out to Bo Byram because I know, yo, he's out there doing his thing. But Sean Walker doing this thing here with us, it's just like peanut butter and jelly right now, Zach. That's what it looks like.
It does feel that way. It does. I mean, it is, and we talked about this at the deadline, which was what, like in the middle of March, I think, on the 14th maybe. It was like, hey, this is going to take some time. It's going to take some time.
Yeah.
It hasn't taken a lot of time. I mean, the Avs are red hot here.
Yeah.
And you're talking about, like, you know, scoring with, was it 0.5 left on the...
Maybe even 3 seconds.
It's the latest...
It's crazy.
It's the latest of any goal this year. And shout out to Arturi Lehkonen. He was fantastic. Had an assist and had that overtime game winner. But, I mean, between Mittelstadt and Sean Walker with the dudes already here, plus Val being back in the fold.
Big Val.
George, like, dude, Georgiev is playing great. I have his numbers here. He stopped 32 of 34, but if you watch the game, you know, even the 2 goals that he gave up weren't, like, solely on him by any means. Had a big stop against Draisaitl in overtime on the breakaway. So,
you know what helped Georgiev? Onanen. Onanen doing so well, doing good for himself. Georgiev has no choice but to put up because I was actually talking to Drew the other day saying, do we have a goalie competition coming up? Because Onanen was playing at a high level, but Georgiev was like, no, I'm the goalie.
I'm the guy. Yep.
And this is what's going to be, and we've seen it.
There's like 5, 6, 7 different things, like tangible things, real things that you could point to. Why you could feel much better about the Avs competing for a Stanley Cup than you did literally 3 weeks ago. Literally. And it's the ever-present, you know, nature of MacKinnon, who once again extended, the guy, he's got another 15-game point streak.
He got close, though.
I know.
He needed 3 seconds.
I know. But he's, like, that's tied for the third longest in the NHL this season. You know who has the first? MacKinnon in a separate point streak. So that's the base of the pyramid, having one of the best players in the world combined with, you know, these other guys. But obviously Val being back in the fold, that's another one. Georgie picking up his play. Onanen when asked to step up.
Yeah.
The new guys being implemented and finding their level in Mittelstadt and Walker. Drew, and Drew Spivak behind the glass, such a big hockey fan. So I don't want to sound stupid, but I'm just going to ask the question. The Avalanche defense post Bo Byram trade, are the Avalanche better defensively right now?
It feels like it. It really is starting to feel like it because, you know, Bo Byram, as great of a player as I think he had, like, the ceiling to be, he was more of an offensive-minded guy. And to me, when I watch this team, it feels like they're more defensively oriented or, you know, defensive-minded more than they were pre-trade deadline. And,
yeah.
And Sean Walker, like, he's not really an offensive-minded defenseman, even though he's playing like it the way that he's played with the Avalanche over the last couple games. But it just feels like everything's kind of come together, and they're doing a better job of collapsing, you know, the slot area in front of Georgiev, not allowing the high-danger chances like they were when they were struggling, you know, those times when they were struggling in January and February. It just doesn't feel like that's kind of been something that's happening. So I love the way the defense is playing right now in front of Georgiev. Yeah, Georgiev's played better. Onanen's played great, but I think you got to really give a shout-out to the defense, who's really stepped over the last couple weeks.
Okay, so and that's why I asked the question, because it's like it feels like defensively they're playing as good as they played all year.
Yep.
And then how about, like, you hear, you know, Connor McDavid, best player in the world. Okay. Like, every time he goes against the Avs are big brother. He had a 26-game home point streak snapped on Saturday night. And anytime he shares the ice with the Avs, it's like, and we went through this 2 years ago in the playoffs, like, I remember saying, if an alien came down and watched that series, there is no way, no way in hell, that alien says, yeah, Connor McDavid's the best player in the world. No. It just never shakes out like that when those two teams share the ice.
You know, I hope that this helped Nathan MacKinnon kind of solidify himself. And I keep saying that because it seems like when Nathan MacKinnon does something great, and, you know, he didn't have the strongest game when it comes to points and everything. Yeah. But Nathan MacKinnon doing his thing consistently, he has to be. He's still in the leader, right?
He's the leader in the clubhouse right now.
He better be, man. I can't wait for him to win that Hart Trophy.
I can't either, man. It's going to happen. Home stretch, Avs playing great. Energy around the team is great.
On the road, too!
I think that's three straight now.
Three in a row!
Yeah, 8-1-0 in their last nine games overall. They've won three games in a row on the road. They've matched now a season-high six consecutive wins. You got to go back to the middle to the late October to find a streak this long. And, yeah, just, man, it feels the energy is good. The energy is good.
Shout out to Josh Manson. He likes fighting. That's something I like. I like it, man. I think he ended up hurting a guy. Broke his fingers.
Ooh.
Yes. Ooh. I like it.
All right. Really good stuff there. Something under the radar happened yesterday with a household Bronco name. We'll tell you who and what coming up next.